Hello, this is Beth Ludwig from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the October issue of the Ladies' Home Journal. Our first article is called Dream On by Dan Ferber. Those beautiful, wacky, and sometimes scary nighttime scenarios have powerful magic. They can help you conquer fears, resolve issues, and show off your wild side. Harry Potter roams my daughter's dreams, so does Hermione Granger, and to keep things interesting, Harry's adversary, Draco Malfoy. All this is intentional, I learned recently. Libby, who is 12 and has devoured every one of J.K. Rowling's books, joins these characters every night after telling herself to dream about them. I put myself in the movie, she says. On other nights, for variety, she practices martial arts with characters from Kung Fu Panda. My wife, Diana, takes wing in her dreams. Sometimes, she tells me, she simply elevates from a standing start. I just spread my arms out and fly, she said. It's always a sunny day, warm, and the dream is usually set near her childhood home in a small Indiana town. Occasionally, there's drama. She'll lose control and regain her flying ability right before she hits the ground. But most of the time, she's just soaring. As for my own dreams, the other night I was running across a town square. A guy was shooting at me. I ducked for cover into a blue sedan, only to find the shooter inside the car. My heart skipped two beats. But then, the villain suddenly morphed into a harmless old man. Other dreams I have are much more fun. There was the one a while back in which I ended up with, sexy blonde twins. More about those kinds of dreams later. What are dreams, anyway? The ancient Greeks said that they were messages from the gods. Sigmund Freud called them a royal road to the unconscious mind, full of threatening sexual and aggressive urges that we normally keep in check. In the 1970s, scientists figured out that dreams are regulated by a chemical that comes from our primitive brain stem and kicks off the rapid eye movement, or REM, phase of sleep. Some scientists concluded then that our dreams were sent random stories concocted by the brain. Freudians were not happy with this view. Three decades later, scientists are still arguing, still studying, and now beginning to bring the dreaming mind into sharper focus, showing us why we should pay attention to what goes on each night. Here's how the road to dreamland works. As you doze off, your brain waves slow. Your muscles relax, and your heart rate and blood pressure fall. About an hour and a half later, your brain stem sends its chemical signal, and your brain waves speed up, your heart beats faster, your temperature rises, and REM sleep kicks in. The sleep cycle repeats 4 to 5 times a night, with progressively longer periods of REM sleep each time. That's why dreams tend to pile up as morning approaches or diminish when you're sleep deprived. When you're asleep, two key functions of the brain stay offline. The area that controls movement is shut off, paralyzing you from the base of the brain down, which is why your arms and legs don't pump when you're fleeing a dream monster. Malfunctions in this mechanism may lead to sleepwalking in the stage of sleep before REM, but don't explain why sleeping dogs' legs sometimes move as if they're running in their dreams. A brain region near your forehead that usually lets you distinguish reality from, say, a movie, is also shut down, says Ross Levine, Ph.D., a sleep specialist in private practice in New York City. That's why you don't think it's strange when you see elephants in your dream living room or George Clooney about to kiss you. On the other hand, the limbic system, which controls your emotions, is working overtime. It pulls fragments of memories, the snooty comment yesterday from the woman in the next cubicle, your friend from 8th grade who didn't invite you to her party, and creates a story out of them, So all this helps explain why dreams are emotionally intense and surrealistic, yet feel real. In 2007, Dr. Levine and fellow psychologists came up with a theory to explain why the brain goes to all this trouble. By mixing unrelated memories with your revved-up emotions, the brain can actually diffuse your fears while you sleep. When you put the memories in a new context, they lose their power, Dr. Levine says. The process seems to work whether you remember your dream or not. But it's worth holding on to those dreams anyway. Long dead relatives, those elephant house guests, the smelly cafeteria from your elementary school, all mixed together. What the heck does that mean? I don't know. Neither did Sigmund Freud or that friend of yours who's into astrology or the dream dictionary on the internet. Only the dreamer can understand the dream, says Deidre Barrett, Ph.D. at Harvard Medical School. There are no simple answers or one-size-fits-all interpretations. Basically, your dreams are personal to you. A thoughtful analysis of the images in them can lead to surprising insights and sometimes even life-altering decisions. Certain types of problems are more likely to be solved in dreams, especially ones where the answers can be visualized or where a creative approach is needed. Novelists have dreamed up plots and characters, she said. Computer programmers stuck on a bit of code have envisioned watching the program run. Students have dreamed up answers to homework problems, and at least one person discovered a creative way to arrange furniture in his cramped apartments. Dreams are not good at logic, but they are good at helping you think outside the box. In her dream work with clients, Dr. Delaney uses a dream interview technique to help them discover the meaning in their dreams. One client was an attorney in her 30s, divorced, who had dreamed about a black cat that would sit on her windowsill, hop into the room, raise a ruckus, then leave her in tears. Dr. Delaney asked the woman to describe the cat as if to a visitor from another planet. Cats are distant, aloof, agile, love you when they want, and take off when they want, the woman said. Is there anyone in your life that is like a black cat and leaves you in tears? Dr. Delaney asked. The description fit the attorney's new boyfriend. She recognized that she picked cat-like men when what she really needed was to choose someone loyal, affectionate, and loving, somebody like a dog. This realization helped her change her criteria for choosing men to date. Patty Allen, then 27 and living in Lakewood, with her third child and seriously considered getting her tubes tied after giving birth, she dreamed she was in the Hollywood Bowl on a beautiful evening and a concert was about to begin. In the seats far above the stage, Allen made her way down a seemingly endless aisle, squeezing past one person, then another, to reach her seat. She passed by a family friend she was fond of, not stopping to talk. Finally, she came upon another acquaintance named Judy, who was sitting with her brand-new husband. Judy's real-life first husband had died in a car crash, leaving her with two kids, and she had recently remarried and had two more. The dream absolutely changed my thinking, recalled Allen, now a 56-year-old psychotherapist in Toronto. It was telling me, don't do anything permanent, because you don't know what's around the corner. Because of that, she chose to forego the tubal ligation, and 7 years later, she gave birth to her fourth child. Some of the most memorable and fun dreams are the ones not filled with symbols and metaphors, but with more straightforward, basic urges. Until recently, psychologists had done very little research on people's erotic dreams. That's why Jenny Parker, Ph.D. at the University of the West of England, asked 93 men and 100 women, all college age, to record a dream, including sexual ones. Almost half the men and a third of the women reported sexy dreams. Of those, Dr. Parker said, more than half the men said their dreams focused on the act of intercourse, while the women's intended focusing more on kissing and foreplay. Many women also reported that their partners were unfaithful to them in their dreams. They were likely to dream about people they knew, usually their partner or their partner's friends, although an occasional celebrity would show up. The men were a bit more adventurous. They were reporting sex with women they didn't know, said Dr. Parker. Men's sexual dreams are also more self-centered. According to a 2007 study, for people in the study who averaged around 30 years old, orgasms were more common in women's dreams, and it was often their partner who had one. But in men's dreams, the pleasure was all theirs. Even in dreams, it seems, men only think about themselves. Of course, sexy dream scenarios, like all dream images, are not meant to be taken literally. If you dream of getting frisky with your favorite movie star, it usually doesn't mean that you're wanting or planning to cheat on your husband. But you should take a look at the impulses that caused your mind to cook up this dream. Talking about sexual dreams, edit a little if necessary, can be useful. It helps us get over our inhibitions about our sexuality. That's why it's worth learning what your dreams have to tell you. When you see that the dream images are part of your method of expression, it opens up a whole new world. Make the most of your dreams. You can unlock the clues to your own dreams by following these steps. Remember it. Dream images live only in the short-term memory, are easily lost. As soon as you realize you're waking up, close your eyes and mentally review the plot and images of your dream before you think about anything else. Write it down. Keep a small notebook and pen on the nightstand and jot down the most vivid images. Describe the black cat, the scary man chasing you, the endless hall of mirrors, or even a bright red sports car. Using descriptive words and all your senses to capture the scene, including how it made you feel. Let it simmer. Reread your description. Let it stay with you. Is there anyone or anything in your life with the characteristics you just described? It might be a person you know, or it might be a part of yourself. Surprising insights may hit when you least expect them. Don't look for that to happen every time, though. Some dreams, some like waking thoughts, are just mundane and trivial. Focus on dreams that really strike you. Follow your heart. Your dreams can help you resolve issues and solve problems. If a dream points you toward a major decision, ask a friend or family member to help you think it through. But don't be swayed by her interpretation. Your own insight may be the only one that really matters. Now, they explain some of the common dreams and what they might mean. The dream, you're being chased. Being stalked or chased by a violent person or animal is the single most common bad dream among both children and adults. It's about being afraid of others who have bad intentions, but it can also reveal fears about part of your personality you're avoiding. The dream you've missed the exam. You show up in the classroom for the test, but everyone's leaving and you're too late to take it. You never studied or are completely unprepared, or you haven't even been to the class the whole semester. Such dreams are common among people who care about achievement and are most often about general anxiety or a feeling you didn't live up to your potential in some way. Sometimes a specific event, you missed an important family party, you blew a work project, could be the trigger. Test anxiety dreams also have a flip side. You might be dreaming about receiving a great prize or some other form of recognition for mastering something. The last dream explained is the dream you're naked in public. New dreams may represent shame or worry about social acceptance. Maybe you're anxious about a performance evaluation at work, or perhaps you did something embarrassing. If you spilled wine on someone's white carpet or you said something stupid you wish you could take back, you're most likely to have a naked in the public dream. Whether your dreams are made of long-lost loves or flying pigs, find out what those crazy nighttime visions might mean with our dream decoder. You can go to lhj.com, that stands for ladieshomejournal.com/dreamdecoder, DREAMDECODER. The Answer Lady. This month, our wise and witty experts takes on a friend with a potty mouth, neighbors bearing gifts, and unflattering photos that show up on Facebook. Question. My good friend's husband swears like a gangster rapper. The constant stream of four-letter words no longer bothers me, but I'm certain my other friends would be offended by it. Consequently, I feel as though I shouldn't invite the two of them to a dinner party. Any advice? Here's her answer. One approach is to talk to your friend and admit that you've been reluctant to have her and her husband over for a group dinner because of his colorful vocabulary. It's hard to believe that this has never been an issue for her. Presumably, the two of them have dined at some point with her parents or uptight relatives. So you might want to think about that a little. Has she ever asked him to tone it down? Would she be willing to ask again? If you don't feel comfortable having this conversation, and I wouldn't blame you, another way to view the problem is as a challenge to your hostessing skills. For example, you could invite only your most tolerant friends, the ones you're confident will give your friend's husband the benefit of a doubt until they get to know him. Finally, consider the possibility that you're overestimating your friend's sensitivities. After all, they're grown-ups and most likely take four-letter words in stride. Next question. The couple next door who just moved to our town asked my husband and me to help them rake leaves off their lawn. As a thank you, they gave us a $150 gift card to a home improvement store. That's simply too much. Should we give it back? Here's her answer. It's awkward to have to return a gift, but this one is over the top. You don't want the relationship to get off on the wrong foot, however. So why not return the card along with a note saying that while you're touched by their generosity, they really don't need to pay you back for lending a neighborly helping hand. Count on our help when you need it, and we'll do the same. Another choice would be to keep the card, but use part of it to buy them a housewarming gift. Leave the gift on the doorstep with a note. You were way too generous. Welcome to the neighborhood. The final question. A family friend took some horrible photos of me, granny glasses, no makeup, and three chins, and then plastered the photos all over her Facebook page. What can I say to her without seeming petty or vain? Here's the answer. It's not a bit petty or vain to ask your friend to take the pictures down, and it's well within your rights. And if she intentionally chose unflattering photos, it's mean of her and very seventh grade, to have put them up in the first place. Just be frank. I know you think these pictures are hilarious, but I'm embarrassed to have them online. If I thought I usually looked that bad, I'd crawl into a hole and stay there. Remember that while you cannot take down the photos that other people have posted on their Facebook pages, you can at least untag them so they won't be linked to your profile. Treats for the troops. This mother of four helps organize a Halloween candy drive to give thanks to America's bravest. Halloween of 2007 was over, but Rebecca Kallenberg was still haunted by one thing, candy. She knew there had to be a positive way to pare down her kids' huge stash. The trick was to find a charity that would benefit from the treats. It suddenly dawned on me that our troops could use a sweet taste of home, said Kallenberg of Bethesda, Maryland. She hit the internet and quickly came upon Boatsy's Boxes. That's Boatsy, Boatsie, Boatsy's Boxes, a nonprofit organization that delivers care packages to the troops. Her discovery turned out to be an ideal and timely solution. Members of Boatsy's Boxes, located in West Virginia, were organizing their annual Operation Christmas Stocking Drive. The group assembled thousands of stockings full of donated candy items, toiletries, and phone cards to the troops overseas. When Kallenberg asked if she could donate leftover Halloween treats gathered by her mother's group, Move Over Moms, for the stockings, she received an enthusiastic yes. I learned that the soldiers love getting candy, even gummy eyeballs were a go, she said. Move Over Moms quickly set up a candy drive and sent an email blast to friends and neighbors to spread the word. The result? The group collected hundreds of bags full of candy. Kallenberg was thrilled by the community's generosity. Everyone was so willing to give, especially the kids. Last Halloween, Kallenberg and the Move Over Moms organized another candy collection for the troops, and they plan to do it again this year. It's become a tradition, she said. Families are so happy to be able to do something good with candy that they don't need. It truly is a win-win situation. Here's the author's comments. You really do have the power to brighten a soldier's day, even from across the ocean. Here are just a few simple ways you can support America's bravest. Donate leftover loot. Organize your own candy drive and send the goods to Boatsy's boxes. Visit boatsie.com for details. You may also be able to donate locally. Area churches and community groups sometimes take up candy collections for the troop, as do some dentists. Spread the cheer. You can help create a connection between the soldiers and the poverty-stricken children of the Middle East by sending toys to Beanies for Baghdad, one word, beaniesforbaghdad.com. The troops then give the toys to kids in the community. The last suggestion is provide warmth. Knit or crochet a cozy wool hat for a wounded soldier. January is just around the corner, and it's the coldest month of the year in Iraq. To find out how to do this, visit warmthforwarriors.com. That's warmthforwarriors.com. Warmthforwarriors.com. Happy together. Grab your family calendar and make some firm date for some serious fun. Between work, school, and activities, it can be hard to get your whole crew together for something more exciting than cleaning the house. The solution? Make it a date. Pick an activity that your whole family can get psyched about and pencil it in. The first suggestion is show your talent. Set up a stage and create a lineup so that everyone gets a turn. Mom and Dad perform too, which kids will think is hilarious or totally uncool, depending on their ages, but either way, they'll be entertained. While dancing and singing are fun, you can also encourage hidden talents and skills, like magic or comedy. The second suggestion, get festive for fall. Bundle everyone up and go for a nighttime hayride at a local farm or visit a spooky haunted house if your children are old enough. Then head home to relax with mugs of warm apple cider. Carving pumpkins is another great family activity. Try painting them instead if you have young kids. Or make a collage or mobile with fallen leaves from your yard. Feeling really crafty? Go do it yourself and whip up some Halloween costumes. The third suggestion is having a screening. It may seem a little strange to suggest watching TV, especially when you're probably trying to get the kids to watch less of it. If you DVR your favorite shows and have a Friday night marathon with popcorn or some other healthy treat, you can turn zoning out in front of the tube into quality together time. You'll also cut down on weekly TV watching with the added benefit of getting to skip right past commercials and pause for bathroom breaks. That article was by Lisa Friedman. Good Dog, how animal trainer Sherry Woodard from the TV series Dogtown turns America's problem pooches into great pets. You have to please, please watch this show, Ellen DeGeneres has said about Dogtown, a reality series on the National Geographic Channel. The show is filmed at a no-kill shelter in Utah. that takes in hundreds of dogs deemed unadoptable. Trainer and behavior consultant Sherry Woodard is part of a team that figures out how Dogtown staff and volunteers are going to rehabilitate these shelter rejects and find them homes. When she's not traveling the world giving guidance to other shelters and humane societies, Woodard lives at Dogtown. It's part of a 3,000-acre animal sanctuary with her son, Donald, and four dogs and five cats. We asked her to share some of her techniques. The interviewer, how do you reform these problem dogs? It seems like magic. Woodard's answer, it isn't magic at all. Many of these dogs simply lack skills, and we teach them skills by making them part of our family. It's called relationship-based training. Many dogs are aggressive because they don't trust people. We use positive reinforcement since physical force, pinch collars, and choke chains can have negative results. Interviewer, you make these dogs part of your families? Does that mean you bring these unadoptable dogs home with you? Woodard says, absolutely. Sometimes I even have them sleep in my bed. By making them live in a house, you teach them manners. The staff and I employ our own pets as role models. Rescue dogs watch how the other dogs enjoy being petted, how they love us and trust us, and that helps them progress and become normal family pets. Interviewer, isn't that dangerous? Woodard, you certainly have to be careful. Not all dogs are ready for a home visit immediately. You start out by keeping enough distance so that the dog doesn't react, and then you slowly lessen the distance and reward him with treats for not reacting. Interviewer, what was your most difficult case that turned into a success story? Woodard, one huge success was Animal, a small black terrier we rescued from a puppy mill. This dog had spent his whole life in a small cage with no human contact. When we first got him, we had to handle him with welder's gloves. He was spinning and biting in every direction. Question, what calmed him down? Woodard, we hand-fed him, then quickly taught him that good things come from humans. It's a great technique anytime you adopt a dog. With Animal, we had to take baby steps. At first, he wouldn't eat from our hands, so we had to place the kibbles near him. Eventually, he let us close enough to pet him. After 7 months of socialization, he was ready to be adopted. Question, any other Dogtown techniques that regular pet owners can use? Woodard, animals have destructive chewing problem. We solved it by taking away his food bowl and stuffing all his kibbles in a toy that motivated him to chew on the toy instead of our phone wires. Another technique that keeps dogs out of trouble is teaching them to trade. You pick something the dog likes, such as a toy. Then you get an extra good treat, like chicken or steak or cheese. When the dog goes toward the item it values, you say, trade, and offer the treat, getting the dog to leave the item and come to you. You practice it again and again, so when you're out in public and your dog goes after a chicken bone or a hot dog in a child's hand, all you have to do is say, trade, and he'll come to you. Question, you talked about practicing manners with your dogs. What does that mean? Woodard, think about learning a foreign language. If you don't use it, you lose it. To have fluent language or fluent behaviors, we need to practice. I make sure all my dogs have to wait for their treats. This kind of daily practice helps well-behaved dogs stay that way. If you want to learn more about animal shelters, go to ladieshomejournal.com/shelteranimals. We've run out of time for today's episode of the Ladies Home Journal October issue. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Beth Ludwig, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. So long, until next time.